Konnichiwa, and welcome back to Japan Edge for all things Japan. This channel brings you the latest insights and stories straight from the heart of Tokyo. This podcast is intended for those of you interested in Japan but don't know much about the country, and for those of you looking for insights beyond what the typical guidebooks would offer you. I'll be sharing with you some of the topics that the local Japanese are tuning into recently, and will also give you my personal take on some of our cultural aspects. So, I hope you'll enjoy today's episode. So everyone, I hope you've been following Shogun, a historical drama series about feudal Japan and the power struggles in the 16th century, which is now airing on FX and Hulu. Well, if you haven't, I highly recommend you see it. I'm a person who has always loved watching history-based dramas, whether it be of Japan or elsewhere in the world. And I think I could say that I've seen most of the prominent Japanese historical dramas, both TV series and movies made here in Japan. But this Shogun, I must say, has exceeded my expectations big time. You know how Shogun's producers, directors, and cast members often talk about how they've put great emphasis on authenticity in making this drama. Well, to me, this Shogun feels more authentic than most of the Japanese historical dramas that are made here in Japan, at least compared to the ones that I've seen so far. It's like Shogun made me realize how fakey many Japanese historical dramas made here have been. Just to give you a couple of examples, one aspect that really impressed me about Shogun was the overall lighting or the tone of the scenes. Unlike many Japanese historical dramas that I've seen, the scenes in Shogun are notably darker. Given the absence of electricity and the limited use of candles during this era, it does make sense that the rooms would be dim most of the time. Another example that I noticed was the depiction of the streets and the town of Izu. In Shogun, the streets are obviously damp and muddy, and the houses of common people look almost condemned. And you realize, well, considering how tragically poor the majority of the common people were and how much they had been exploited by their lords, the houses that you see in Shogun actually feels right. And considering the poor state of the sewage system and the selective cutting down of the trees only where necessary, there wasn't much sunlight penetrating through. So it does make sense that the streets would be damp and muddy, as they are depicted in Shogun. I feel like I'm truly experiencing this period for the first time in my life through Shogun. What I find truly captivating about Shogun is its blend of fact and fiction while staying true to the essence of history. It is a work of fiction for sure, but the story is built in such a way that it resonates with the truth of the era. At the heart of the history is a character called Toranaga, a warlord, or daimyo in Japanese, who is inspired by the real-life Tokugawa Ieyasu. Ieyasu's journey to power was full of challenges all through his life. During the time of the Civil War, or what we call the Sengoku period, Japan was in constant warfare everywhere in the country. And victory meant survival, and defeat meant death, not just for yourself, but for the entire clan. This was a time of relentless conflict spanning over a century, I think around 135 years. Ieyasu's rise to control was anything but easy. One tragic aspect of this era was the practice of sending the children, the wives, and even mothers sometimes as hostages to enemy clans, often as a means of forming alliances. This was a common strategy used to secure alliances with neighboring clans. So in the first episode of Shogun, you may recall Toranaga talking about his own childhood experience of growing up as a hostage, which was a true story of him. Surrounded by powerful clans, Ieyasu's father sent him to be raised by the neighboring and influential Imagawa clan as a means of survival. Ieyasu's early life was nothing that would foreshadow his eventual rise to become the ruler of the country. The period of civil war was finally nearing its conclusion as a warlord or a daimyo called Oda Nobunaga extended his influence throughout the nation. Episode 6 of Shogun introduced a new character called Kuroda, who was based on Oda Nobunaga himself. Nobunaga was so close to controlling Japan when he was betrayed and assassinated by his top lieutenant, Akechi Mitsuhide. Now, by the way, this Akechi Mitsuhide character does appear in Shogun briefly in episode 6, and he is called Akechi in the drama as well. And he is depicted as the father of Mariko. In fact, it is actually true that the daughter of Akechi survived, and she did become a Christian, but she never served as an interpreter for Anjin. That part is fiction. She actually died in the Osaka castle in protest of Ishida Mitsunari, refusing to become a hostage herself. So the drama took the betrayal of her father and how that had made her life difficult, but that she remained strong with her faith in Christianity. After Oda Nobunaga was assassinated, one of his loyal warriors, Toyotomi Hideyoshi, who is referred to as Taiko in the drama, took revenge and killed Akechi. As a result, Hideyoshi successfully seized what Nobunaga had founded and ultimately controlled the country under his rule. Now, it's very interesting that Toyotomi Hideyoshi, who was from a peasant family and started off as a very low-ranking soldier under Oda Nobunaga, was the one that eventually became the figure to end the century-long civil war in Japan. Hideyoshi's rise to becoming the ruler of Japan was not foreseen by basically anyone, given his origin and his early position within Nobunaga's ranks. And class division was so severe back then that it was even unprecedented for a peasant to be even working for a warlord under any circumstance. So history is full of drama for sure. Another interesting point that is not often mentioned is the fact that the three pivotal figures that shaped the history of Japan, Oda Nobunaga, Toyotomi Hideyoshi, and Tokugawa Ieyasu, were actually relatively close in age, which is unlike how they're usually portrayed in various movies, including this Shogun. Nobunaga, who was the eldest, was born in 1534 and was assassinated at the age of 49. Now, Hideyoshi, who seized control after Nobunaga's death, was only 3 years younger. So had Nobunaga not been assassinated, Hideyoshi's ascent to power would most likely not have taken place. And Hideyoshi and Ieyasu were separated only by 6 years. Hideyoshi, known as Taiko in the drama Shogun, had already passed away in episode 1. But he was 62 when he died, which was a respectable age for that time. On the other hand, Ieyasu lived to be 75, significantly surpassing the life expectancy of that era. Since Ieyasu's opportunity for dominance arose only after Hideyoshi's death, his victory and the beginning of the Tokugawa Edo era might not have happened at all had Ieyasu not lived this long. Okay, moving on to Ishido. Ishido's story differs somewhat from the historical reality. The character of Ishido is based on real-life Ishida Mitsunari, who served under Toyotomi Hideyoshi for years and rose to prominence. Like Hideyoshi, he was also of a peasant background. He was one of the most loyal lieutenants of Hideyoshi. Now, Mitsunari's primary role was in administration, serving basically as a bureaucrat under Hideyoshi's regime. And this is a very important historical note, because it was Mitsunari's bureaucratic approach that became his greatest weakness. Lacking war experience and charisma, he struggled to unite the warlords after Hideyoshi's death. Many powerful warriors had strong resentment towards Mitsunari's decisions that were based on logic and bureaucratic thinking. And a group of warriors went against Mitsunari to overthrow him. Now, interestingly, it was Tokugawa Ieyasu who intervened to save Mitsunari's life, acting as a mediator between him and the disgruntled warlords. As a result, Mitsunari retreated to his home territory, and that was what triggered Ieyasu's further consolidation of power. But Mitsunari wasn't giving up. He was seeking for the perfect timing to face Ieyasu, and ultimately the conflict between these two led to the War of Sekigahara in 1600, with Mitsunari leading the Western Army and Ieyasu leading the Eastern Army. Now, prior to the war, Mitsunari's Western Army was considered to be in favor, outnumbering the Eastern forces. But Mitsunari's lack of credibility and a series of betrayals by key daimyos led to his big defeat. The battle concluded just within hours, and Mitsunari was captured and executed in Kyoto. He wasn't even allowed to seppuku, which was considered to be the honorable way of dying on your own terms. But instead, Ieyasu ordered his head to be chopped off, and his head was hung alongside a river in Kyoto as a criminal. So Mitsunari's ending was pretty brutal. It's worth noting that there were still quite a number of warlords who had loyalty to the Toyotomi family. And in addition, historical documents do suggest that the heir was pretty smart. So had Mitsunari been able to sustain power until the heir grew up, the Toyotomi regime might have continued. So too bad on the part of Ishida Mitsunari. I mean, if he had had people's skill, the course of history just might have been different. Anyway, I am eagerly anticipating the continuation of the Shogun drama. FYI, I deliberately omitted discussing Mariko or Lady Uchiba today, as their stories are incredibly intense and deserve their own dedicated podcast episode. I do plan on exploring the roles of women during this historical time period in the near future, but in the meantime, let's enjoy the remaining episodes of Shogun together. I am so much looking forward to talking about it with you again when the drama is all done. I hope you had fun listening to Japan Edge. Stay tuned for more episodes, and also check out the Japan Edge Instagram. I will be traveling to Izu, where, in Shogun, was Toranaga's territory, and where he stayed prior to raging war against Ishido. I will upload the beautiful sceneries of Izu, so please look forward to that. For now, またね! さよなら!